everybody. This is Robin Ayub from the Localization Fireside Chat, your favorite podcaster in the localization world. Today, we are hosting episode 124, believe it or not, a two-year-old channel. We've been talking to various experts around from various industries, bringing various topics to the community on a variety of subjects. Today's subject is about franchising. And I have the guest of honor and a pleasure to be speaking with Giuseppe Grammatico. When I saw your last name, Grammatico, and I'm in the localization industry, I thought this has to do something with translation. I couldn't wait to get your story. First, I want to welcome you to the channel. Welcome to the conversation, Giuseppe. Thanks. Always a pleasure to have new thought leaders on this channel. And I know you host your own podcast, so this is not new to you. You've done this before. So welcome to the channel.
Thanks, Robin. I appreciate that. And congrats to you, 124 episodes. I was reading a stat that most people don't pass 10 episodes. But interestingly enough, by the way, you mentioned my last name. My last name, I guess, means grammar in Italian. And that was my weakest subject in school, so ironically.
So when I saw your last name, to be honest, I thought you must come from either a language background, because the grammatical is grammar, or you have some sort of a connection to it. And today we'll be talking about anything other than language.
Well, English was not my first language, so I learned English at the age of six. And I'm looking back, we had a conversation with the family, and the most interesting family member, I had a great uncle who was a monk back in Sicily. But grammar wise, teaching wise, my father wanted to be maybe a math teacher at some point before coming to this country. But that's it. So we were trying to trace it back.
So I was going to ask you that, you know, everybody who comes on the channel here, we get started by getting to know the individual, and would love to get to know you. The community would love to get to know you. Everybody's got a story, Giuseppe. So from your side, if you don't mind, let's get started, kickstart the conversation by telling us your story.
Yeah. So Giuseppe Grammatico, that's a mouthful. A lot of my friends call me G, born and raised in New Jersey. First generation family came over from Italy in the early 70s. And I grew up in the restaurant business. I opened up an Italian restaurant in 1975. And that's how I cut my teeth into entrepreneurship, got to learn everything about business ownership. Didn't appreciate it then, appreciated it obviously years later. And that's where I got my taste and said, you know what, I love the idea of owning a business, but not specifically restaurants, between the hours and the number of staff and working holidays and weekends. So when I decided to go to the corporate world, I worked on Wall Street, a very rewarding career, financially rewarding, I should say, but was absolutely miserable. Got married, talking with my wife, we said, you know what, we want to start a family, and the 5-hour commute, round trip, door to door, wasn't going to work if we started a family. So I researched jobs just like everyone else, and the internet has an abundance of information and podcasts and shows. And I just got more and more confused. So I finally reached out to a franchise coach and consultant, which is what I do today, and opened up the world of franchise ownership, that you can own a business. You don't have to have this commute and have a life at the same time while creating time and financial freedom, which is what I do today. I help people there. So we started a family. Time freedom was on top of my list. My son has been playing soccer 14 years. I became a coach and never missed a game. I'm proud to say that's my success story, along with my daughters, Girl Scouts and events, birthday parties, you name it, have never missed an event. So due to work. So yeah, I mean, that's when people talk about success, they tend to go to financials. That's truly my success story, is that I was able to change my environment, change my situation. Wasn't easy, but that's what I do today. I guide people in helping them achieve time and financial freedom.
Absolutely. So when we talk about franchising, which I love the topic of franchising from two angles. One is the importance of franchising in an uncertain economy. Economically speaking, I'm being in Canada and around the world for that matter, and in the US to some extent in some regions. Some regions are doing better than others. But and it becomes not necessarily from an economic point of view, it becomes an individual decision. And I can see franchising on both sides, meaning that as an individual, I want to create some sort of a financial, whatever the scenario is, stability, freedom, time, as you mentioned earlier, which is great success, you know, when you describe success as I was able to spend more time with my family, very admirable. This is where, you know, this is where I believe, and I believe the same thing you do, spending time with family is a success story versus those people that they burn themselves day in, day out in the grind doing the corporate job thing, which you've been through. And, you know, I just, when you mentioned the commute, I was, I'm very familiar with that commute. I worked part of my life. I worked for a company that had an office in Weehawken, of all places, in Jersey.
Not well.
And, you know, we had to travel across the river to the other side and to New York and do, you know, meet customers and talk to other. And I understand completely what you're talking about. So yeah, it's small world. So from a franchising point of view, can you walk me through, you know, the flip side of that? So I understand the individual decides I want to be, I want to have some sort of a different things in my life. So I'm interested in franchising. That's one thing. So what about those individuals that they own some sort of an intellectual property, or they own some know-how, or they own some sort of a process that makes that unique to them, and they were thinking about putting some sort of a franchise around that? Do you deal with that, or is it strictly on the individuals who are interested in buying a franchise?
We help with both. I specialize in those individuals looking for that change and looking to invest in a existing franchise business. But for those individuals, because I have probably about, I would say at least one conversation a week, someone that has a unique idea, unique business model, and they want to franchise their business, we have conversations and then we figure out who would be the appropriate partner to help them make that a reality. What I will say is this, and some kind of high level advice there is that there's a lot of options, right? You can franchise your business, you can license it, or you can just own a couple locations and own 100% of the entire business. There's no right or wrong. What I tell people is that when you do become a franchisor, right, you start your own franchise, you know, you always have to ask the question, why the heck would anyone buy this franchise? What is that differentiator? Especially if it's not something maybe unique, maybe it's in the, we'll call it a painting space, right? You're painting homes and painting buildings. What is so unique about your process that just blows everyone away and says, you know what, I need to learn a little bit more about this. The second piece is, you know, when you're a franchisor, you know, you're looking for a way to essentially expand across the US, we'll call it North America, US, Canada, and expand rapidly, getting that royalty in return as a franchise fee in that royalty. But essentially your role shifts to being a coach for these 100 franchisees across the country. You know, you have to look at it in a way, you know, what does the franchisee need? What are their pain points? Where can we improve? How do we utilize AI and things like that? If you have a great concept, I don't think the best thing to do is to create a franchise disclosure document initially. I would hold off until the very end. I would speak with a few companies, a few experts, and figure out if there's, you know, what that business looks like, if there's any modifications or changes, and create a proof of concept. If you have your home office location, maybe open up another office or two, make sure it works throughout your state, throughout your country, work with them, learn, make the mistakes, learn all the pain points before you decide on either regional or national franchise expansion.
Yeah, I was going to ask you is how to pick the right model, but I think you started describing it. Can you talk a little bit about how to pick the right model for each individual? I'm assuming each individual has different aptitude to things. They have different needs, wants, and likes in life. And I'm assuming the franchise gets matched to the individual. And you probably have a catalog of franchisors out there that you probably can access the brands that they're interested in or whatever they're trying to achieve in life, right? And how to avoid traps? Because for somebody who's worked in corporate life all their life, I mean, they're doing a dramatic shift from being an employee to being an entrepreneur in this case, right? So they're going to manage their own life in a franchisee environment. How do you walk them through that shift, if you will, or do you?
Yeah, we work with, so I'm going to answer this way. Our back office, we have full-time staff. All they do is pre-screen companies. There's 4,000 franchise companies between the US and Canada. That number's lower in Canada, definitely higher in the US. And they're pre-screening companies. They're looking at the companies. They're reviewing the franchise agreements. They're speaking with the franchisor. They're speaking with the franchisees. Not every franchisee, but they're asking them for their feedback. They're looking at, is there growth? If you've succeeded with 50 franchisees, how are you going to support another 50 franchisees? So they're looking for national expansion and things like that. And if they do pass our pre-screen, we will work with those brands. Now, when looking at a brand, you know, where I think the mistake I made and mistake most people make is they get overwhelmed. They look at these top 500 franchise, top 100 franchise lists. Those are great. That's more for entertainment, for lack of a better phrase. Just because they're on that list doesn't mean they're a good fit for you. Doesn't even mean that they're available in your specific state, especially emerging brands. I may not be available in all 50 states. If they're US based, they may not be available in Canada. So that's a good starting point. So what I challenge people and what my coach challenged me on was figuring out, brands aside, because Subway was the hot franchise 20 years ago when I started, was what does this ideal business look like? So we went down the list and there's 15 to 20 characteristics, but we're going to look at things such as what is your role in the business and what is your transferable skill set? You don't need experience in the business of roofing, but you do need experience of being an extrovert, you know, being in sales, networking at Chamber of Commerce events and negotiating with contractors. That's the skill set. You don't need any a roofing experience because that's easy to teach. You're not going to be installing any roofs. You're going to be managing a team of contractors or W-2 employees. We'll look at things like investment. You know, we do this for a house. We get pre-qualified for a house, but a lot of people don't do that on the franchise side. They said, yeah, let me just look at everything. Well, it doesn't work that way. You need to be qualified. You need to have certain net worth and liquidity requirements in order to even have a conversation with that brand. We need to make sure they're registered in that state. If you're in California, they're not registered, the franchisor won't even initiate a conversation. So it's looking at these characteristics, the number of staff, is it worked from home or a brick and mortar location? So when you talk about avoiding traps, that's the trap you're referring to. If you're not specific on what you want and you get inundated with, or just like falling in love with, I love this product, I love the sandwich, I love the service, the massage that we're getting at certain brands, or the haircut I'm getting here. That's where I think things start falling apart, is that you start falling in love with the service when you don't know the numbers, you don't know what that role is. That's where I start. You start off getting selective on what that looks like, figure out what you can get qualification for on the financial side. Now you have a model and saying, okay, I can afford X. These are my funding options. This is what my ideal franchise looks like. I'm in, Austin, Texas. Let's see what's available, both resale and new locations. So that's the big heavy lifting. And then we introduce each and every one of our candidates and families directly to the brands. Where I see people skimp on their due diligence, and maybe they just don't know this because they're doing it on their own, is that they talk to the franchisor, they spend 90% of their time there, they talk to one or two franchisees, and then they're off to the races and signing that agreement, if assuming that they're approved, and they're not spending the time speaking with franchisees, current franchisees. If you're going to buy a Dunkin' Donuts franchise, wouldn't you talk to the Dunkin' Donut franchisee down the street and ask them for their advice? So I think just skimping on certain areas of due diligence, not talking with enough franchisees, questioning certain things like, okay, you have a great history, 10 years in business, 100 franchisees, that's all great. That's the past. You know, what does the future look like? And I call it talking to the captain steering the ship, in that, you know, you're talking with the owner, the founder, the CEO, where is this business going? What does the support look like? And those are equally as important conversations to be had.
Absolutely. Now, I'm going to start calling you G now.
Yes, it's easier.
In the context of all of this, like, do you feel like people are making the jump, and how successful are they? And in this case, you know, success, I guess it's all about metrics. So there's several things here. One is, you mentioned it earlier, and I think you're trying to say, I'm just putting words in your mouth. So If you don't agree, just correct me. Separate the passion of the product from the viability of the business that you're entering into.
Yes.
And treat it as, this thing makes sense to me on paper, yes or no. You know, you mentioned, like, if you like a sandwich, maybe the business is not for you. Maybe it doesn't make any sense. You got to dig deeper than what attracted you to the brand to begin with. Am I correct with that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes you may not know what good numbers are, what good margins are. So if you're looking at a fast food franchise compared to a painting franchise, look at the numbers, look at the investment. But yes, I'm not saying you can't have any passion in the business. You know, there's a lot of people that get into senior care, great numbers, recession resistance, and you're helping the community. And then I had someone that got into another franchise that was in the health and beauty space. And they said, well, we want to make as much money as possible to set up our own charity, you know, within our, you know, in the area we live here in Florida. So there's different ways of approaching it. But sometimes the passion piece, like I'm a passionate soccer fan, and looking at soccer franchises, many of them are brick and mortar retail, nights, weekends, holidays, right? We talked about the similarities to the restaurant space. Guess what? I can own another business that frees up my time, which is what I did. And my son and I and my family go out to soccer events all the time and trying to get World Cup tickets, which isn't looking good. But if we can get one,
that I hear they're all sold out.
I have the right to buy, but yet I can't figure out how to buy the ticket. But yeah, the final game is going to be about an hour north of here in New Jersey, MetLife. But yeah, it's, you know, the passion piece. If you get into a soccer franchise, that could be the quickest way to kill your passion.
Yeah,
I've experienced it in other industries and things like that. So sometimes that's the passion is the getaway. So find that business, that vehicle that supports the time freedom that you can leave at 3 o'clock. Like I'm leaving at 3 p.m. today to go watch my son's varsity game. And then afterwards, potentially go to a Red Bulls game here in Harrison, New Jersey. So yeah, I think that's extremely important. And that's where people need to kind of separate and they get overly excited, but take a backseat and look at the numbers, look at the role, and go back to that franchise model we created.
So if you were to look at all the franchises that you know about, the brands, the database that you have, what are the three to four buckets that you can put these franchises in? And I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So bucket wise, four main buckets, I would say is we call it the four quadrants. So quadrant one would be a home-based service business, a business that could be run from home. It could scale quick. It opens quick, lower investment. You don't need any type of a brick and mortar location. And that could be a painting franchise where maybe you're subbing out the work. Next quadrant would be a non-home-based type of business. It can initially start at home, but eventually you're going to need an office. We see this in senior care. We see this in larger home service type of businesses where you have, for example, restoration, where you're getting equipment, you have four or five vans on the road, you need some type of flex space. So a little bit higher investment, a little bit more staff, but you're getting into a flex space, a small office and a warehouse space. Quadrant three would be what I call light retail, where you're in maybe a shopping mall, smaller investment, a little bit quicker to get opened up because you're already in that structure. It's just basically outfitting the space. And then the fourth quadrant would be kind of heavier lift brick and mortar where you're getting into your standalone buildings, your McDonald's, your Chick-fil-A's, where the investments are going to obviously be much greater. Now you're looking at a standalone, much larger of a build out, unless you're taking over another competing franchise and there's maybe less to do, where the investments are getting into that $500,000 to million plus investment and getting I would say 1 to 2 years to get open. So those would be kind of the four buckets.
Absolutely. No, there are many people that there are like at a fork of the road right now, including myself. I used to work for a large corporation. I parted ways in early September, and I'm still trying to figure out what's next. I started a company called N49 Networks, where I'm going to be doing a lot of work in coaching, development, and do some actual some fractional work in some cases, but many people are, at a question mark, especially now with how AI is transforming the corporate world. And there are many, probably there are people knocking on your doors, probably day in, day out, trying to figure out, okay, what's out there that I can do that I probably shift from being a corporate employee where my job is threatened by technology, et cetera, and move to a different world where probably I can create some sort of a financial security for me and my family for the next foreseeable future. As they're going through this, what's your advice in terms of to watch for red flags, et cetera? So what are the things that, if somebody comes to you and says, I want to do this, what do you advise them on to watch for?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, first off, going back to the basics, nothing changes no matter who I'm working with. We want to make sure that the ideal model and match is there. Red flags are when you're meeting with the founder and they can't tell you about the future of the business. Red flag is, talking to franchisees and hearing a completely different story. Not talking with just one, but multiple, and it's not linking up with what the franchisor has to say. And you have the right to have that understanding and speaking with the franchisor. Red flag would be you have an initial call, by the way, this is just a two-way interview, right fit type of call with the franchise brand, and they're already inviting you to a discovery day, which is the last step in the process. That's a red flag. Now, they may say, hey, by the way, it's October, whatever, and the next one is going to be in January. It's something to aim for. That's okay. But if they're inviting you, well, how the heck do they know if you're even a good fit at that point in time? It takes multiple calls, multiple meetings. Now, when you talk about everything going on in the world, again, you know, you go back to your franchise model, look for the matches, and then you look for the brands that overperform, over exceed expectation. We've had multiple founders of franchise companies that are investing millions, some cases tens of millions of dollars in AI. They could do that because they are, you know, they're utilizing their network. You know, they have 50, 100, 150 plus franchisees. They have the royalties, the franchise fees coming in, and they're reinvesting a lot of that money into AI. We were working with one franchisor. You know, they said that our call center can handle up to 1,000 calls at the same time, so that, you know, yes, there's always going to be staff on hand, but the AI is helping with the quick responses, the quick questions, the scheduling and stuff like that, where maybe you don't need a person to have. So it's, what are the companies embracing AI? If they're ignoring it, if they're saying it's not important, that to me is somewhat of a red flag, unless they have it's such a niche and it's so different. But, you know, if they don't have a plan to embrace technology, we have brands that could be run from your phone. You don't even need a laptop. You have a smartphone. A general manager isn't needed. And on top of that, you could run the business part-time while keeping your job, while deciding what that transition looks like, because the tech stack is so advanced that it's automating certain things. There's no paper. Once a communication goes through, for example, in senior care, it goes back to the franchisee's office, but it also goes back to the family. So maybe they're taking care of mom and dad. The kids know what's going on. Hey, mom fell. Dad was complaining about his left shoulder. Writing that down so that nothing is being mixed, using video, using audio. So those are the things, embracing the tech, embracing the AI. We've seen a lot of brands actually help with cutting down expenses. So when you look at your pro forma and your monthly costs, well, the old model had 5 employees. Now we're down to three or four. We had a much higher marketing spend or a call center spend. We're able to reduce that cost because we're using AI. It's the future. I'm not saying it's replacing businesses or people, but it is going to cut back on costs, especially for the franchisee to be more efficient. Lastly, it's support. You're paying an ongoing royalty. What am I getting? If they can't give you a clear answer on what the heck you're getting, run the opposite way. The support is the whole, what you're getting. You're getting, obviously, that system, that business on training wheels, that business in a box, but you want the ongoing support after launch. So that support is a combination of your community, which is the culture, the franchisees in the system, sharing knowledge, experiences, and maybe even marketing campaigns together. Having that coach not just teach you at their home office, but actually travel with you in the field. Because I jokingly say it's like a Tony Robbins event. You get really excited. You come home on a Monday and it's like, okay, where do I start? It's almost like you need that coach with you to really help you that first week. We have some franchise companies that will come out and say, okay, this is what we learned. Now let's get our first couple accounts together. Let's set up our first couple vendor relationships together. Let's hire your first 2 employees together. And that way it takes a lot of the burden off the franchisee. They get the reps in, they learn the verbiage, they learn the process, and then from there they start to scale.
Now, from your perspective, G, like the type of job that you're doing in terms of consulting, is that an industry? Is it like so many companies are doing the same thing that you're doing, or you're probably unique in a certain aspects? But is that like something common? People go to a franchise consultant to pick something, or no?
It's funny you say that, because most people, I would say 9 out of 10 people I talked to didn't even know our role existed.
That's right. I mean, I'm surprised.
It's, you know, basically it's like a executive recruiter, right? They're learning about you. They're looking for companies that would be a good fit. Almost similar to a real estate agent, right? They're finding out. I mean, you're basically listing features that you want. we dive in a lot deeper. And you may come to me and say, I want a brick and mortar franchise. I'm going to ask why. And most people come back and say, I don't know. I'm just so used to seeing food franchises. So we definitely dive a lot deeper. So, I mean, there are other individuals that do what we do. I have partnered with a company called Franchoice. So I individually operate or own my own business. Franchoice helps with a lot of the pre-screening and relationships with the franchise brands. But the people I work with are the families. I don't work specifically for any franchise brand. I'm not part of those brands. For me, it's all about the fit. And the best part and why we work with a lot of people is that there's no cost. We're paid a referral fee right directly from the franchise companies, just like a real estate agent, just like an executive recruiter. So there's no cost, there's no contracts, and we're able to really help you narrow that search down from this 4,000 franchise universe to, I recommend starting with three brands that all compare, so you can compare and contrast them. And that way you can find your perfect fit, but you got to put the time in, you got to do the due diligence. And if not, if you're just taking everything at face value and going really fast through the process, you could potentially struggle because that match may not be exactly there.
So let's talk a little bit about time horizons. For instance, in your opinion, once the franchise owner takes over a new franchise, for instance, and I'm assuming, or in some cases, at least these individuals are looking for a new thing because they lost their job or they're doing a shift in their life. How long do you think for the first time an owner would plan on perhaps drawing salary out of this venture or profit, however you want to qualify that? How long do they have to wait before they can start taking some money out to survive with their lifestyle?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends because if you were talking about business, a franchise is a business like anything else. So with the franchise, the variables will be, are you running it full-time, which is going to be much different than the person keeping their job and running that business semi-absentee. So if we look at a home-based service business, you're up and running anywhere to 1 to 3 months. Mm-hmm. That franchisor, so and that depends on when the next trainings are and your availability. So it could be a little bit longer, it could be a little bit less. And then if you're ordering trucks and equipment and things like that. So the factors are going to be running it full-time or part-time, you know, what's included. So if it's a water restoration business, it's going to be at least 90 days. You need the truck and equipment. If it's a business coaching business, it's going to probably be half that amount of time since you don't have the equipment to get up and running. Profitability, it's all over the map. You know, it depends on how you're financing this venture. If it is a 1099 model, meaning maybe it's a painting franchise where you're running it full time and there's no staff needed and you're 1099ing your subs, I mean, it could be a lot sooner than later. It could be potentially the first 6 to 12 months. Again, I'm not making an earnings claim, but it could be sooner than later because you'll have a lower investment and you're not paying staff to waiting until business is coming in, right? The subcontractor is getting awarded the work. They're getting a percentage of the work and they're getting paid after the work is done and the job's been paid for. So that controls and helps with your cash flow. So potentially could be the first year. I recommend that first year being a builder year if possible. And if you can afford it, and we talk about numbers and we talk about having this buffer, if you're leaving your job, making sure someone's paying that mortgage or rent or the student loans, but you need that buffer. So that 1 year, that first year, trying to reinvest as much as possible. That's what I did. I reinvested everything into staff, into marketing, into equipment, into expanding my business. We bought, you know, additional territories and things like that. So that first year, you're learning the business. I hired a person, didn't work out, had to replace them. So it's that learning curve, that learning process. But it could potentially be that first year, depending. And you also, I've seen the opposite where people paid themselves right away, and that's okay as well. It's your business. You could do whatever you want. But the result of that was that they had to cut their marketing spend, and that's not a good idea that first year. You want to make sure you're spending the amount that's recommended by the franchisor and not, you know, cutting that in half in order to pay yourself a salary. So don't overextend yourself. If, you know, get that loan, look at the funding options, maybe use a retirement rollover for the business, but make sure you have that buffer so that if business takes a little bit longer to get up and running, you're not like, well, who's paying my rent? Who's paying the royalty the next month? You have a plan in place.
Yeah, you bring me to a very important question. I was thinking about as we're talking about the topic, is the financing piece. A, do you get involved in that? Does your company help facilitate conversations, the person into who is interested in buying a franchise into the best options for them? And can you walk us through that financing piece?
Absolutely. So yeah, so we do a high level review on financing. We always recommend to a funding partner such as Benetrends or Fran Fund, where they'll do a full review. There's no cost for the review, and they'll give you both recommendations in their wheelhouse, outside their wheelhouse, which is great. And that's why we recommend it to them. And then there's a cost if you move forward. So lots of different options. What we've seen is the top three are home equity lines of credit, real estate market, in many parts of the US and Canada have done really well. So people are using equity in their home in order to reinvest in a business. Less on the cost side, quicker to get those funds. Another option that's been extremely popular is called a ROBS. It's a rollover business startup. This was created back in, I believe it was 1975 with the IRS and Benetrends. And what that is essentially you are creating a C corporation, that's your entity, and buying shares in the business. So essentially taking your money out of your retirement, which you have to qualify for. And this is the tricky part. It has to be a traditional IRA, a 401k from a previous employer, and you get the money. It's usually about a 30-day or less process. You just have to use a reputable company that is going to help you with all your IRS reporting, or you will get audited. I've heard a lot of stories. That's not fun. But just because, you know, you're taking money, if you're not filling out the appropriate paperwork, it looks like you took an early withdrawal from the business. If you're a US citizen, then you can take advantage of the SBA, Small Business Association loan. It's a government-backed loan, 10-year variable rate, where you're putting about, we'll call it 20-30% down, depending on what that franchise fee is. And that's roughly a 10-year loan. But yeah, just because you have options doesn't mean some people are just not comfortable taking money and using retirement assets. I will say, and I've been doing this a long time, a lot of CPAs don't understand that plan. So what a company like Benetrends does is they say, you know what, get your CPA in the line, you know, the three of them. So Benetrends, the person looking at the franchise, and the CPA, we'll do a three-way conference call to see if it makes sense. That's a great option if you're comfortable with it, and there's nothing to pay back. It's your money versus using an SBA loan. One that I like, and kind of a fourth option that I noticed not too many people are using, is a security-backed loan, a loan on your non-retirement investments. This is my favorite. You have a $100K in a stock portfolio. You can take a loan, I believe up to 70% of that, and you're taking a loan on your own money. You could do it through your financial advisor. You keep the securities. There's no commissions or cap loss, cap gains. The caveat and the thing to consider is if that 100K is invested in Bitcoin, and Bitcoin has been pretty volatile, if it drops below that threshold, there could be a margin call. There could be, you know, where you have to put in some extra funds in there to get it back up to that 70% ratio. So, but that's also a quick way of just leveraging your non-retirement assets. It's quick. It's easy. They'll give you the rates. And maybe the rate is 7%, but you're gaining 10%. So you're still up 3%. Obviously, that's a variable and that's not something anyone can predict. But yeah, we do that. And then we do high level. We send over to Benetrends. They'll do an analysis. And at the end of the day, it's let me look at options. Let me look at all the costs involved, the time frames. There's going to be a big difference in time frame from an SBA loan to a retirement rollover. If you're based out of Canada, then you would not have access to the SBA loan. I'm assuming you have access to retirement rollover and everything else. So that's some.
I don't know. In Canada, they call them RRSP instead of 401k. But I don't know if you are allowed to borrow against your RRSPs in Canada.
Okay.
I don't know the answer to that, but I don't think you can. And which brings me to another topic, perhaps. An interested party who is probably interested in buying something in the US, but they're non-US residents. Some of our listeners are outside of the US and they're interested in coming to the US and buying a franchise. How do you deal with that? Is there a possibility? And second is, how do you deal with it?
Absolutely. And this is, we did a whole show on this with a good friend of mine years ago. So yes, we have actually had that same situation. So number one, and the best advice I can get to when listening is you hire an immigration attorney. Immigration attorney is going to give you kind of the things to be doing as far as what that specific business or franchise needs as far as the investment, the number of staff and things like that and types of businesses. So that's number one, hire an immigration attorney. Number two, you need to be a treaty country. You can easily look that up. There's that E2 visa. I'm not familiar with the other types of visas, and I know there's been changes, and I can't really talk about. But on the E2 visa side, it has to be a treaty country. So I believe there's 30 plus treaty countries. So if, as long as you're a treaty country, that will definitely help. If they are not a treaty country, you'd have to talk to the attorney about other options. Now, on the franchise side, the attorney is going to give you those requirements, X amount of investment, number of employees and things like that. So that's number one. Number two is that we need to ask the franchisor if they're okay with an E2 visa candidate. Not all franchise companies will allow E2 visa candidates. So that's another requirement. That's something I do behind the scenes. And the process is simple. As far as once you have those requirements, and yes, that's not a problem. I want to move forward. I want to move from Canada to Florida. Then we still, the process of looking at brands, making sure we hit the requirements from the immigration attorney. Then we look at, again, the total investment, the skill sets, the roles. What the process would be is that you would invest in the franchise, get the franchise up and running. I believe it's the day you open the franchise is the day you apply for the E2 visa. E2 visa requirements are not black and white. It doesn't just always say this, this, and this. The attorney will give you kind of those requirements. You know what, 100K is a good number, but let's beef it up to 200,000. One employee is good, but let's do two employees. So they're going to give you a range. Things change, you know, with policies, laws, and things like that. So that's why I always say go to the immigration attorney. It's money well spent, and they'll always do a free consultation. But that's the way it works. You would open up the franchise, then you would apply for the E2 visa, and the attorney will help you with all the paperwork. And that's
Thank
a quick version. Yeah,
I really appreciate it. It was like sort of obscure to me, right? And I thank you for that. I appreciate it. Some of our listeners may be interested in understanding how that process works, but I really appreciate how you explained it to me and to the audience here. So,
and I have a list. Yeah, for anyone I work with, they say, "Well, where do I find an immigration attorney?" There's some people I've spoken with. I don't benefit. They don't pay us referral fees in any way. And I will say, someone that I reach out to that contacts me back is usually on my list. You'd be surprised how many people you reach out to and don't hear back. I would say probably 1 in 5. That's how, I don't know if people are busy or what, but if I get a call back, you're on my list.
That's good.
We're setting the bar really high over here, but it's up to you, obviously, to find the right fit. And maybe you want someone in a specific location or in the state that you're going to be opening in. I don't think it makes a difference, but there's plenty of attorneys that can help out.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you work across the entire country, right? So you're not state specific, are you?
No, the entire U.S. and Canada. On occasion, I'm working with someone right now that is looking, they have a second home in Europe, potentially buying a master franchise. So we're able to assist. It's not a big part of our business. I have someone also that lives in both Florida and Mexico. So we're looking at brands. At the end of the day, the brand has to allow expansion into those areas. You'll hear the term, and you don't hear this, it's not as popular as it was years ago. You're going to hear a term called master franchise for anyone listening in, US-based company, maybe, or a Canadian-based company, and they want to expand to Italy, where my family's from, as opposed to buying maybe a unit or location in Rome. They may come back and say, why not buy a master franchise, which essentially means you're buying the whole country of Italy, and you will be essentially that second layer. You will be the master franchisor or franchisee. Yeah, and essentially you can open up a location. If it's a gym, you can open up a territory. If it's painting, and then you would find the franchisees across the country. You would get a percentage of the franchise fee and a percentage of the ongoing royalty. You're going to be that number one person in charge of assisting those franchisees, as well as getting support from the home office. But keep in mind, you know, maybe it's not available today. It may be available tomorrow. Every country has different laws. They have to create a separate franchise agreement specifically. If they were thinking of expanding to Italy and you show interest and there's promise there, they would have to create an FDD specifically for that country.
And then language becomes a problem too in some cases, right?
You're going to have to do a full analysis. I remember in grad school, doing research in franchise, and sometimes the wording, the logos, they don't translate well. They mean something completely different. So you have to be very careful there. Sometimes the menus have to get adjusted. I know going to McDonald's in Sicily, where we were on vacation a few years ago, they have different, I didn't realize they had different menu items. The food tastes different. You know, it just, everything was, I mean, it was, you had the logos and stuff like that, but you have to make it work for that culture, for that specific country. And you have to understand all the rules and regulations. So yes, there's a lot that goes there, especially.
That's what we call localization in my world.
Yeah.
You have to localize the brand to the region. And that's what our industry is really specialized in. Like, not just necessarily translating the contracts or the franchise contract itself and the process and the manuals and everything else that goes with it. Because I'm assuming some of your franchises are not straightforward as owning a restaurant. I'm assuming some of your franchises are a bit more complex than just, you know, buying a Subway franchise and putting it in Italy, for instance, right?
Yeah, I mean, even in the States, you look at a company that does water and smoke mitigation and restoration, you have at the local level insurance and licensing requirements. Then you get into a state like Florida, where there's an added level to get a contractor's license. California, the exact same thing. So it's night and day. You know, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just the reality of what you need. So when you go into certain states, there may be different requirements, and that's just in the United States. You go elsewhere, some brands just may not be interested in ever expanding. There's plenty of U.S. and Canadian based franchises that are content in this area, and they don't want to venture off because it is a lot of money to create a franchise agreement. And it's not, you can't just throw it in ChatGPT or Google Translate, especially, nope. You know, the legal verbiage, right? If you screw up a word, that's a
difference. You're on the hook for it.
You're on the hook, right? It doesn't matter. Well, Google told me, well, that's your problem because you're supposed to be reviewing it. So yeah, there's some huge liability there and certain things. There may not be a need, right? I mean, maybe is there a lot of flooding or is there a need for restoration? Will this specific fast food chain do well? You know, do people in Italy, I keep going to Italy, but while we're on, you know, are they eating burgers like we eat burgers here in the state and vice versa? There's a lot of analysis that goes along with it because there's a hefty investment, right? You're gonna have proof of concept with one location and then start expanding aggressively across the country. So there's a lot that goes along in there, but then there's maybe some simpler concepts, you know, maybe business coaching where there's not a brick and mortar component, but you're offering business advice, you know, with globalization and companies doing business all over. People are doing business via Zoom all day long. That may be something a little bit easier to implement in a different country. But yeah, the brick and mortar, the gyms, is there a need for Pilates? You know, will people appreciate that in a different country? And in that country, can people afford it? You know, does this model work? Just like in the States, they won't open up a location if the average of household income doesn't hit a certain number. They're going to do the same and look at another country. Can the customers support this 300 euro, 300 whatever per month cost? Does that work? And maybe it's only part of the country or only parts of Europe. So yeah, there's a lot there. There's a lot to it.
Absolutely. Now, we're coming to the close here. One last question I would like to ask, if you don't mind, G. Regarding, like, now that you've developed a relationship, you've worked with the individual, you found them the franchise, they operated the franchise. Fast forward down the road, a few years down the road, and they're ready for an exit. How do you get involved? Do you help them? Do you, you know, take that task on similarly to when you help them buy it and walk them through that process?
I literally just got, actually this person had already sold his franchise. I didn't even know he was selling it. And he's like, I just sold my business. What's next? I want to look for something else. But yeah, you know, the beauty of working together is I don't make the intro and disappear. You know, we work together weekly, mm-hmm. helping you with due diligence up until you sign that franchise agreement, but I don't go away. I get calls all the time. Hey, I had this question I want to run by you before I brought it up to the franchisor. Great, let's chat. Or I'm ready to sell. What do I do next? And my advice is always the same. Why do you want to sell? You know, what's going on in your world? And then, you know, contact the franchisor. The franchisor is going to give you kind of those options. What are the costs to sell? It's all detailed in the franchise agreement. Or, you know, you don't have to use the franchisor. You can just hire a broker. Why I tell people not to call brokers first, it's probably the worst thing you can do. Nothing against brokers is that a lot of brokers have exclusivity agreements. So if you call the broker, sign the agreement, and then go to the franchisor and say, no, we can sell it for you, we have someone, then the broker is going to want a cut of the sale. So you need to speak with a franchisor to look at the options. There are some brands that have a preferred broker network that they can put you in touch with, and they have the costs all figured out. It may save you a few bucks. But honestly, the best thing to do is if you have neighbors, franchisees around you, the number one way to sell a franchise is through your neighbor. Hey, you know, so-and-so looking to sell. I have a couple right now selling because a family member got sick. They have to move across the country to take care of them. They're going to move in, and they're, you know, just going to the neighbors and saying, hey, you can absorb this. We'll stay on board, you know, as much as we can, probably virtually, since we have to take care of our family member, but it'll save you 8 to 10% broker fee. And again, nothing against brokers, and brokers are great. I don't deal a lot with resales unless something comes across the desk, but you want
to
know
financially efficient, basically, you're saying, right? It's financially efficient to go through the franchisee first or your neighbors. Sell direct, basically, you're saying.
If you can, and then that'll, you know, you'll pay a small transfer fee versus a percentage. But also, you need to know what you think you could get your business for. So we had I'm not going to name names, just we'll keep it general. But we had a window covering business. And I remember saying that person was looking at a resale. And they said, well, historically, they go for X seller discretionary earnings, what the owner's taking out of the business, net income, you know, everything included. And I said, okay,
does it deal with EBITDA or no?
It's a combination. It depends. It's seller discretion earnings. It's EBITDA. It's a combination. It depends who you're actually working with. So there's no exact formula. I'll leave it at that. So sometimes they'll do EBITDA 4, seller discretionary times 3. So it really depends on how they're putting that marketing, that package together in order to sell the business. Equally as important is finding out which calculation to use, but also historically, what has that franchisor, what have those resales have gone for? And we found that historically that one brand was going for 3.5 seller discretionary earnings or maybe it was EBITDA. So finding out historically what they're selling for, so you have kind of a base. Okay, well, I can get that extra 0.5 multiple. What does that look like if I'm selling it directly to a franchisee? Now I'm not paying the broker. I'm okay doing the 3x multiple because I'm saving the 8 to 10% on the sale. So they'll walk you through the franchisor. The brokers are going to have minimums as well. So it's not just a percentage, but yeah, explore that. I work with an individual. His name is David C. Barnett, a great guy. He'll also specialize in saying, well, why do you want to sell? Well, it's involving too much of my time. Well, if you like the business and it's profitable, maybe working on a plan to, you know, kind of distance yourself for the business. He helped we became good friends over the years, friend of mine that bought a restoration business and helped them really back off the business because he was really involved and really empower his staff to the point where he actually kept his job during COVID and kept his benefits and was able to run the business part-time. So sometimes it's just a key shift in role, empowering an employee. And now you got this great assets generating income. Why sell it when you could just make a small tweak and maybe pay a coach a few bucks in order to help you convert that?
So. Absolutely. Giuseppe, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Before I wrap it up, any last comments?
Yeah, Robin, I appreciate the invite. This was fun. I didn't know if we were going to do this today. It was a little bit under the weather yesterday, so I appreciate you putting up with me.
No, thank you for making the effort. Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it.
We're about 90%. But yeah, it's, you know, at the end of the day, you owe it to yourself to empower yourself. You can't control the economy. You can't control politics. You can control your attitude and you can control being proactive. You have a job. Your job is not safe. I don't care what job you have. You owe it to yourself to create a safety net. It does not have to be a franchise. I'm going to get off my podium on franchising, but you owe it yourself to be proactive and really look out for yourself. No one else is looking out for your best interest. So whether that's buying real estate, it's doing a startup, investing in a franchise, that's the safety net that you're creating. That's the safety net you're creating in the event you are downsized. And then your employer comes back and says, great, thanks for your service. We had a friend of ours go through this. They gave him a couple months severance. And now he's like, well, what the heck do I do now? I have a family, holidays are around the corner. And no one is really hiring right now. So, you know, you owe it to yourself to do the research. Franchising isn't all about fast food. You don't need to be a millionaire. There are plenty of brands where the investment are under 100K or between that 1 to 200K range. You owe it to yourself to look at these industries, figure out if the fit's there, because ultimately that's what you can control. You can control the effort. You can control keeping a job and having that side hustle and then deciding, hey, guess what? I didn't get laid off, but now I am going to leave on my terms because this business is up and running. So do your research. Don't worry about the how. That's where people get tripped up and never do anything. Focus on the who. I'm more than glad I'm not the only consultant out there, but if you need help, you go right to the website. It's ggthefranchiseguide.com. I have a podcast as well called Franchise Freedom. I have a book in this mustard yellow. We're going to change the color of this, but it catches the eye, called Franchise Freedom. It's my exact blueprint. It's a 30-minute read. It's exact things I did, plus some bonus extras in there in finding your franchise. Learn. If you're ready to chat, which is what I encourage you to do, you can book a call on the top right-hand side of the screen. It'll help you figure out if a franchise is potentially a good fit. We chat and figure out together in 20 minutes, and I'll save you hundreds of hours of research and looking at all the brands if franchising maybe isn't the right fit. So yeah, that's it. That's my 5-minute TED talk there, but I encourage you to reach out and talk to someone who's been there, done that.
Absolutely. Giuseppe, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen and the audience, thank you so much for listening in. Thank you for taking the time and being with me and Giuseppe today and listening to this episode. Hopefully you got some gems and some good advice out of it. Hopefully some of the points that we've raised today, you know, during our conversation hit home for you. Hopefully that you found my conversation with our dear guest valuable to you. And I want to ask you to continue supporting the channel by liking, commenting, and sharing the content that we produce for you here on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me, and I'll see you at the next episode. I appreciate it.